This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. It is Friday, January 9th, 2004, 10:04 a.m. on the central coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind, the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we're talking about Macworld. During the second half of the show, I will welcome you to join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org, click on the geeks, and then send a message. I'll be giving out those numbers again when I invite you to participate in about a half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks. John Tracy, owner and operator of FeltonGames.com, Miles Elam, programmer and student of American literature, and Sean Cleveland, technical marketing communications manager for Transmeta. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Morning, Lyle.
Morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Before we get into Macworld and other Mac stuff, let's do some geek news. Sean, we'll start with you today.
Yes, this week in Las Vegas, CES is happening.
The other show, the other big show this week?
It's the consumer...
Electronics show.
Electronics show. Thank you. Very, very large show. Probably one of the largest in Las Vegas now. Definitely larger than Convex. It's also a very fun show because it's the gadget show. So there have been a lot of announcements this week, so we have a lot of news this morning. Top of the news, ATI has announced a new product line called the Imagion 2300. And it's a 3D chip for cell phones. So although 3D gaming hasn't taken off in cell phones yet, wireless gaming has become very popular. And it's expected to generate about $1 billion in revenue by 2006.
When you say wireless gaming, how do you mean?
Well, cell phones now, you know, are pretty much used for cellular communications.
Right.
But there are new standards that allow for the transmission of files and things, real-time, internet. And with that comes gaming, so people can actually play games between devices.
So 3D gaming and cell phones don't exist, but the game market in cell phones is pretty big.
It's pretty big, and it's going to grow. And with this chip, companies can now not only just display 2D graphics, but they can do 3D graphics and MPEG 4 encoding with 30 frames per second of video playback. Video capture, there's better image compression and decompression, and support for gaming standards like OpenGL.
So. Cool.
Yeah, so it's accelerated 3D graphics.
Yes.
So anyone can paint an image that looks like 3D, but it's actually...
This is actually accelerated by on-chip hardware.
And that's nice. And there's a lot of... I mean, we're seeing even in operating systems, in word processing and such, we're seeing 3D graphics being used more and more. OpenGL is kind of a big thing. Like the Macintosh OS, which we'll be talking about later.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's a big part of viewing stuff, so it makes sense to move into the phone arena. Thank you, Sean. Miles.
California, this is a story I missed last week, but California bans front seat computer use.
Uh-oh. Yeah, you mentioned last week, and it totally captivated us, so please add more detail.
Right. Assembly member Sarah Rees has put forth a piece of legislation.
And her email address? Oh, sorry.
Oh, this is as of the first of this year. The state of California has banned the use of, specifically I was talking about notebook computers, but computers used anywhere in the front seat of a moving vehicle. The idea was to get rid of distractions. However, unfortunately, the wording is fairly vague, so you end up with all the people that are using a Palm device or a pocket PC device and using it for navigation or navigation aids are breaking the law.
And what about you guys having a Prius?
Yeah, I was just wondering about that because that's a little, you know, especially with Sean's, there's a navigational computer right there.
But you're locked out
right,
of the controls.
This one is not, what it's talking about is general purpose computer.
Okay.
That's why the pocket PCs and the Palms are being affected. But the things like the Prius, to my knowledge, are not covered by the legislation.
People who have GPSs integrated in their cars, typically those GPSs do not work when the car doesn't drive.
Right. But
I mean, you can watch. It tells you how to get your destination. You can see the map. You can't monkey with
it. You can't play with it. Miles, this means, though, that it definitely covers a laptop. If you have a laptop sitting on the seat next to you playing music, you're in violation.
Right. And if it could be your passenger is doing their own thing and doing something that's completely unrelated to driving, the other person isn't interested, but because it's something that would be considered distracting.
Now, is there a law specifically stopping people from working metal, you know, doing blacksmithing in the front of their car while they're driving?
I mean, not specifically.
Of course there are things.
What kind of cigarette lighter do you have in your car?
You're not supposed to shave or read the paper in the car, but I see it every day.
Yeah, but it seems to me so ridiculous to make these specific laws to say, drivers, don't do this because it might affect your driving, instead of saying, drive well. I mean,
when you're in your car, drive.
Well, they are worried about distractions. There are laws already
totally
on the books with regards to DVDs can like movies cannot be played where they're viewable from the front seat. They can only be in like say minivans where the screen is viewable from the back seat. Things like that. That's
God. I just saw on MTV where there's people who actually have TV sets integrated into their steering wheels.
But where do you draw the line, though?
Yeah.
Like, do you say
the
radio
is
too much? Like, do you say, you know, you can't listen to KUSP on your way to work?
I support the idea of manufacturers being mandated not to include things that could be distracting and dangerous for the driver. But I think when it comes to the driving a vehicle, piloting a vehicle, you have a certain responsibility. And the more protections we take and the more laws we put in to force people to do things,
the less
they feel responsible.
Yeah.
And that's a problem for
me. Perhaps automating vehicles is the way to go.
Maybe. Just get the driver out of there completely.
Yes. Yeah, if you're so distracted,
you
can't
called
drive.
You mean it's
called a bus? Well, yeah. Right.
Take your laptop onto the bus. It's
or,
illegal.
You know, we're in Santa Cruz, probably guessing Santa Cruz County. Of course, a bike is available, too.
I don't know if carrying a laptop while you're riding a bike is the best thing.
Sean.
Yeah, Toshiba has highlighted at CES a new high-definition DVD player. This is a single-lens optical head device with both a red and blue laser diode that enables it to support next-generation high-definition DVD, which is called HD DVD-ROM, and also current discs. And that's a very important thing. They're really promoting compatibility with current DVD standards, which is really nice.
Now, this is new. I mean, I haven't heard of a drive coming out yet that supports it. So
yeah, they're none available yet.
So if you're thinking about buying a drive and you've got a little extra money to kill, this might be the way to go.
Yeah, what this does is this player uses a blue laser and 120-millimeter diameter disc to record up to 2 hours of HD high-definition content.
Is that the same size as a DVD? What was the size?
120 millimeter?
Okay.
I think it's about the same, yeah.
Looks like about the same size. Okay.
And this will be competing with Sony's standard. So we'll see what happens.
All right. More DVD
Sony standard is Blu-ray technology.
Right. Thank you, Sean. John.
Meanwhile, on Mars.
What happened on Mars today?
On Mars,
or just last week?
On Mars. Well, let's see. We're just a little bit past midnight right now on Mars at the landing zone of Spirit. Spirit is the rover that NASA sent up that landed, popped open last weekend. They've been trying to get it off. No luck yet.
Getting off? What do you mean?
I'm sorry.
They're leaving the planet already?
They're leaving the planet. No, they landed in a... There's a vehicle that it lands on, and then on that vehicle there's a rover that detaches from it and goes and explores.
And specifically, the vehicle that it actually goes through the atmosphere in is this giant triangle with big balloons on it. So the balloons land on the ground, and then it opens up kind of like a flower, and it drives off the pad.
Right.
And what's the problem?
Outside of that triangle, there's a whole bunch of airbags. Those are the balloons. Some of those have been caught on the bottom of the ramp. And one of the things they're worried about is when they go down the ramp, it could damage the wheels and the running gear of the rover. So they're trying a bunch of different things to get it off of there. Probably not right now because it's midnight in the crater that they've landed on, the Gustav crater. So they can't do anything right now because it would use a lot of battery power. So they're waiting until morning, and when morning comes, they will attempt to do a lift and tuck where they try to get the deflated airbag out of the way by raising, if you think of the triangle like a flower that's unfolded, they're going to try raising one of the petals of the flower that the airbag stuck under and then pulling the airbag back. I don't know exactly how they do that. That's pretty amazing to have that much control over the airbag. But if you think about sending a $400 million device to the other planet, you'd want control over everything. So they're going to try to lift the flower lift the pedal, pull the airbag back, lower it back, and see if they can get off. Otherwise, they're going to have to turn the rover in place, which it can do, and drive off another ramp.
Oh, there's three ramps, of course.
Yeah, there's three ramps.
John, thank you for that. I hope you keep us informed next week as well. Miles.
Eighth grader suspended for hacking in Texas Junior High School.
Can you please put parentheses around that word hacking when you say that?
What he was actually using was a command in a Windows-based operating system called NetSend. I believe it's actually been around since networking was first introduced to DOS.
NetBUI, isn't that one that era?
Yeah. Well, you had that, but I think there was a variation of that for Novell network clients as well. Network clients, rather. And what happened was this child's father had shown him how to do this NetSend. It's basically you're able to send a message to a particular computer. And just go NetSend, you know, to this IP address, and a little message pops up on their window saying,
is that the equivalent to Windows Messenger?
Very similar, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Actually, I think it is.
I think it is.
It is the same thing, yeah. And so he went to school and was, like, showing
this,
it off to his
eighth
friends.
Eighth grader.
Right, the eighth grader. Goes to school and goes on the computers and goes, like, hey, check this out. There's a you can send to everyone on the computer, everyone on the network, rather, this command. You can say NetSend, I believe, all. I believe is the term for it. And a message will pop up on every computer connected to the computer you're on.
So what he sent, something really foul?
No, he sent hey.
H-E-A?
H-E-Y.
Uh-huh.
And the principal, when he first saw it, just, like, you know, got rid of it, went, whatever, something random. The computer science, the computer teacher, or the teacher in charge of the computers in the computer lab, said, were you involved with this? You know, went up the chain and basically had the student suspended for 3 days for sending a, yeah. When there was no, and the thing is, there was no written policy about this. There was no warning given. There was no thing saying, you shouldn't do that, don't do it again. There was no precedent for it.
It's just another case when a geek gets beat down by the man.
Well, how hard is it to do a NetSend?
It's probably
you open
up
a command
words.
Prompt and you say NetSend.
Yeah,
so you have to know how to get into the DOS window, or you have to know how to run.
Which amounts to what? Four clicks?
Yeah, four clicks. Probably four clicks and, you know,
one click
words.
And then four mouse movements.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is now hacking.
That's hacking.
Okay.
Wow. 3 day suspension. We should have the geek on. Eighth grader. Thank you, Miles. Sean? John? No,
I don't know. If he says something that we don't like, we might have to.
Yeah, we might have to suspend him. Like, hey.
All right, so I'm going to read off some more things happening at CES.
Yeah, CES.
Sony has unveiled a new music online service. It's called Kinect. They'll offer more than 500,000 titles for 99 cents per track.
Same thing that Apple's doing with iTunes, and same thing. What's the other company? The big
Napster.
Napster.
So, you know, of course, Sony is backed by Sony Music, Sony Pictures, Sony Electronics, and Sony Corporation of America. So
that's kind of big.
You know, it'll probably, you know, succeed at some level.
I would assume.
They are also showing off a bunch of new stuff. A higher capacity mini disc format called HIMD. HIMD.
Okay.
Can hold up to 1 gigabyte of content and cost about $7.
Oh, wow. That's nice. I wonder if they'll finally let you copy the digital file from the mini disc to your computer rather than
interesting to see. They're releasing a bunch of new players, too. Also introduced is a 42-inch liquid crystal television, a 61-inch Vega plasma screen, and a 12-inch portable broadband LCD television that supports wireless connectivity to the Internet so you can browse over your TV. And they demonstrated their Blu-ray DVD technology, the dual-layer DVD recording technology. We'll see how that plays out.
And which one kind of wins the DVD new next-generation battle?
If it happens, like anything like the reader, then, you know, maybe we'll have two standards and drives will come out supporting both.
Similar to what we have now for the lower res. Thank you very much, Sean.
Yep.
Miles?
And some quick security updates. The Linux kernel has a local root vulnerability. Just to say what local root vulnerability is, the person actually has to be logged into the computer to do the exploit. It isn't just by being on a network.
So you have to run a rootkit first.
Right. Okay. Well, you first have to get onto the box, and then you have to upload the rootkit, and then you have to run it.
Right.
And that's Linux kernel 2.4.24. And in addition, Microsoft Word Forms passwords have been hacked.
What is Microsoft Word Forms?
This is allowing a Word document to be password protected before edits are allowed, and if someone tries to tamper with it, you can see that it's been tampered with. Fortunately, a hack has been found that you can take a file that has been protected in this way, crack it, modify it, and then restore the original password so no one can tell that it's ever been changed or been altered. This has been a big deal. One particular thing that it talks about is Dell Computer uses password-protected Word files to send quotes to their prospective customers for systems.
So now the users can edit the
and
quotes.
One of the things about it is that you can send this protected document to your customers and say, like, yeah, this is what we want to do. No one else can look at what I've told you, and no one else can alter what I'm going to send you. What we do is going to be legally binding.
And the user can't take it, edit it, and go, cool, I want this quote.
Right. The user can't get it and go, let's see, wow, a new Athlon XP for $50? Right on.
Let's see what Miles is shopping for. So basically, this hack is just a complete vulnerability in their security.
It's for Word documents. Yeah. It's not something like suddenly your computer is going to turn into a pile of
slack. It just makes the documents less protected.
Right.
And, of course, Adobe offers the same kind of password protected on files with a PDF format. I don't know. I think that's still secure, so maybe the alternative is to that.
It just goes to show that security is not a plus or minus value. It's secure or it's not. It's a process. You have to, you always have to keep vigilant.
All right. Any other security items?
No, that's it for me.
John?
Verizon, also at CES, announced that they are planning to take their 3G network, which is a wireless connection network, gives about 300 to 500 megabits per second, or I'm sorry, kilobits per second connection wirelessly nationwide. So they're over the next 2 years, they're going to be pouring, I think it's about $3 billion. Yeah, $3 billion into this network to expand it.
I wonder if they'll have coverage in Boulder Creek.
No.
Thank you. John, thank you for that, Sean.
Western Digital has announced a new 250 gig external hard drive. So this follows on, we got the question last week.
How big is a hard drive?
About external hard drives, what do we recommend? I don't know if I'd recommend this because it just came out, but it looks pretty cool.
Can we start calling them quarter terabyte drives yet?
I guess that would be, yeah. Huh. So this has a USB port in the front, which is really smart, and one in the back, and two FireWire ports. Although it looks like the FireWire ports are in the back. Kind of interesting. This thing will retail for around, looks $400 maybe, somewhere around there. And it also supports a bunch of different memory card types, including compact flash, 1 and 2, memory stick, and secure digital. So integrated in the front of the drive are all these little ports. So if you've got a digital camera supporting any of those memory standards, you can take it out, pop it into this drive, hit a button, and it'll move all the data off onto
nice.
The hard drive.
I like the idea of integrating your...
So if you're taking a lot of pictures, you've got this thing nearby, you can just keep dumping it.
Can you do
it
without the computer on?
Yes.
Ooh.
That's what it appears, how it works, yeah.
Nice.
So that's kind of a neat
feature for that
technology.
And a 250 gig drive, that makes a lot of sense. Or, excuse me, quarter terabyte, John. Sean, thank you for that. Miles?
Researchers at UC Berkeley and Stanford have developed in the lab the first ever nanotube technology on a silicon circuit. Basically, carbon nanotubes are a form of
a molecule.
Right. It's a molecule, a carbon molecule, that has a lot of different potential applications, such as very strong structures, and in this case, very small circuits. So it allows for chips to be designed much smaller to allow better heat dissipation.
They're extremely conductive. Okay.
They're extremely conductive, but they can also be insulative.
Right.
Depending upon their application.
So, do they have something functional?
Well, they would allow for chips that hold approximately 10,000 times more data than we have today.
Wow.
So if folks are worried about, like, computers are becoming so fast, I don't know how much further we can go. We have a little bit more time.
As long as that comes with light. Thank you very much, Miles. John?
Hold on.
Okay, we'll go to Sean.
So Palm Source is finally releasing version 6 of their OS, which is codenamed Sahara. It's too bad Chris couldn't be here to tell us a little more about it
because he's at CES.
He's at all the shows.
Chris Dunphy, who works for Palm Source, one of our standard geeks.
So I guess this version will be available to developers on February 10th, and it's going to be continuing to be marketed alongside OS 5, which is the current version. This new version, although I don't really know what kind of new features it has, the OS itself has better support for multitasking and running applications in the background. It should be more flexible in allowing landscape and portrait views, and Palm is hoping that it will create opportunities for new device applications through improved security and wireless data transfers.
Cool. Well, thank you for that, keeping us up to date with Palm Source. John?
Bill Gates announced at CES the new Windows Media Center extender. What they're trying to do is seamlessly integrate all the technologies in your house and get the data going where it needs to be so that you can have, again, it's like, video music on your computer that can be shared on your TV and on your stereo, things like that. They have a new family of products called the Windows Media Center Extender that allows these devices to hook up to PCs and to your network so that they can share information. And most of the major manufacturers, Dell, Gateway, Alienware, and HP, have are going to be coming out with extender set-top boxes by the end of the year. And Gateway and HP are also going to be selling TVs with extender technology built in. So you'll basically be able to put your TV and hook it up to your network, and then you can grab information from your, whatever, from your PC or from your storage media.
Great. Thank you very much. Sean, do you have one more?
Yes, I do. If you're using Windows 98 right now, you've got 1 week left to get support from Microsoft.
That sounds so scary. What actually happens in a
dun,
week?
Dun, dun, dun.
What actually happens
in 1 week?
Week,
it will be 6-year anniversary of Windows 98, and Microsoft is celebrating by stopping all support for it.
Yeah, but nobody uses Windows 98 anymore, right?
Only a quarter of the population.
Actually, yes. A quarter of those people who surf the internet are actually doing it with Windows 98.
And I'd assume a higher percentage of people that don't surf the internet for computer users are Windows 98 than Windows XP or Windows 2000. So we're talking about a lot of users, a quarter of the PC users, which is about a quarter of the users of computers, because Mac is so small in the percentages. So we're talking about 25% of the computer users will no longer have support for the operating system.
Right. But what Microsoft is not going to leave you hanging, though. I guess they have worked out a deal with publisher Future Publishing, who does a bunch of magazines, actually out of San Francisco. I guess they're going to be releasing a CD that will contain hints and tips, technical content, exclusive knowledge base articles, and all of those, everything you need to do your own troubleshooting. Now, they said that they have not, they may release patches,
but security holes.
I guess they're really downplaying that because they want, if anything's released, they want it to be, a nice surprise for people.
Right.
But yes, they're not going to support it anymore.
Okay, so it might be time to upgrade your machine and then therefore possibly your hardware, and that means a lot, actually. Yep. We might want to do a whole show on getting your computer, getting rid of 98 and going to a new operating system.
That's a good idea.
Thank you, Sean and John and Miles, for all that wonderful news. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks are Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, and Miles Elam. On Wednesday, our very own geek, John Tracy, and I shot up to San Francisco to immerse ourselves in Mactum. In case you're missing Macworld, which closes today, you're in luck. John, what did Apple talk about this Macworld?
It was the most boring Macworld ever.
Okay.
No, it
that
was actually
one review of it we just read this morning.
Yeah, that was I feel like Apple has had such a great success in the iMovie realm and Final Cut realm, going after video production, that they're now targeting the music market. They came out with some new consumer devices, the upgrade to the iPod line, a new mini iPod, which is a credit
card.
It's like a thick credit card. It's about a half inch thick, but
it's a real thick credit card.
Yeah. It's about half an inch thick, but it's this little tiny 4 gigabyte MP3 player.
And it's a hard drive, not solid state.
Right.
And it's got already recording devices for it, so you can use it as a personal recorder.
And it's got the same ports that the existing third generation iPods have. So yeah, all the external devices that hook up to the third generation iPod should work on the mini pod.
Okay, what music editing?
I think that the coolest things they released were a new application called GarageBand, which allows you to choose from 4,500 samples of music, and you can put them up there and do anything you want to them, as far as tempo, tempo, pitch, octave changes, things like that. Set them up, loop them, then you can also add your own samples in. And he had a lot of preamps set up. The demonstration we saw, guy picked up an electric guitar. He had a bunch of preamps set up. So he said, okay, this is an arena rock sound. And, you know, he rocked out. This is a...
And he's playing his guitar, which hooked through the
which was hooked into the computer via MIDI interface. We didn't see actually if he had a breakout box that he's going through or what. But, yeah, he had his guitar hooked up to his computer. And all he'd have to do is click on the different amps, and his guitar would sound entirely different. You know, they had a preset.
Like a floor switch. Like
exactly. Only more so, because I don't know if there's a limit to it. Also, they released a $99 keyboard synthesizer that goes along with GarageBand.
And we're not talking... We're talking about a piano keyboard.
Right. Yeah. It's not a piano keyboard. It is, you know... Keyboard. What was it, like 4 octaves?
Yeah, it looked like about that.
It's your standard.
And it's full-size keys. It's just kind of shorter.
Right. So that was pretty exciting. And then they also updated their application for creating soundtracks. I think it's actually called Soundtrack.
It is called Soundtrack.
That's why I couldn't think of the name. Which allows you to quickly make soundtracks for movies by grabbing samples and making your own music.
It has a lot of the features of GarageBand.
Yeah.
GarageBand really is, the idea is bands can use this device to record their music and actually use the Mac as part of the music stream for live performance as well.
Yeah,
I would assume each performer would need a Mac to do that with, but it's there. And, of course, a single performer could be playing some beats that they'd laid out before and playing their guitar and singing and do it relatively live and change the beat and have things set up for them. So it's kind of it's an interesting tool to get into the music industry from the creation side as well as from, you know, they're pretty good at this point about the broadcast side. We're going to continue our discussion about Macworld and what John and I saw there and what was interesting and fancy and all that. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. If you have questions or comments regarding Macworld, Macintoshes, or anything, we can cover anything you want. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can use the Internet. Visit geekspeak.org. Click on the geeks on the left and then send a message. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell in the air room. Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, and Miles Elam. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing Internet services, including DSL and spam filters, for home and office throughout Santa Cruz County. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. You are welcome to call in now and ask questions and comments to our geek panels. We have a Windows expert and a Linux expert and a few Mac experts, and we have hardware and software experts. So call us up. We're here for you. Phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And, of course, you can go to geekspeak.org and contact us from there. All right, so, John, that's kind of what Apple released. They also released kind of an upgrade to their iLife thing. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I only know about the iPhoto one because I since we haven't... I have an internet-based business, and we take a lot of pictures. I have an iPhoto database with about 4,000 pictures in it, and that's trimmed down from 7,000 pictures. Anyone who uses iPhoto with more than 1,000 pictures knows that it takes forever to open. The database gets really cumbersome. One of the new upgrades is if you can have up to 25,000 photographs in iPhoto now, and it'll open right away and move right away.
And that's iPhoto 4.
That's iPhoto 4. I'm not sure what the updates to the other applications have been.
Well, they added, I think they added GarageBand into the iLife package. Is that part of it?
No, that's not part of it.
Okay.
No, it's separate. Although, I know if you buy Final Cut Pro, you get Soundtrack, which is similar to GarageBand, if you buy the full $1,000 Final Cut Pro version.
Some other features of iPhoto that were added in by Apple is the ability to, during slideshows, rotate images and have more than just one music source, but actually have a whole playlist. O'Reilly actually produced and gave out to everybody, O'Reilly's a publishing company, a book called iLife 04. And basically it's a small missing manual showing features and subsets of the news.
This is a preview for a book that will be coming out shortly.
And O'Reilly handed that out to everybody at Macworld, basically. Oh, yeah, Sean, you're welcome to take a look at that. All right. That's what Apple was doing, and that's great. We'll maybe get more into that to some degree. But what other cool things did we see this year, John? What do you like? What caught your attention?
Man, the thing that got me the most, and I'm trying to remember the name of the group that was doing it.
I know what you're going to talk about.
Yeah. Was that audio video disc. It was about the size of a record, but it was an audio-video disc. They put it on just your standard, everyday DJ-style turntable, and they'd taken the needle head off and put an optical reader head on, had it hooked up to a video player.
And the record that was on there had, like, a pattern of black and white marks on the record.
Right.
So it was rotating around, and that...
Just like a record would.
Uh-huh.
There was the video head... Where the needle would have been, there was this audio... video reader, this optical reader.
Optical head, yeah.
Yeah, this optical head that was reading the audio and video stream.
It wasn't reading any information from the disc. It was just getting a beat from the disc.
No, it was reading the information from the disc. It was picking up the audio and the video.
Absolutely not. Sorry, John. I'm going to overdrive on this. That disc was a generic disc with a pattern beat on it.
So
what was happening is there's media files on the computer, a video, anything you want on your computer, and the video was being played back by the beat pattern that was coming from the record. So the cool thing about this, of course, is you can stop the record and scratch the record, and you scratch the video and the audio or anything you've hooked into that record. So it's a way of interfacing to the video information like a user would interface with a turntable. So it allows mixing of video from the perspective of mixing like a DJ would mix.
I totally didn't get that, but now that you say it, it makes so much more sense.
Cool.
And it's so much cooler.
Because Then it's like you need a lot of records to get all your video. But yeah, that's how it worked. And it was really fun to do that and not feel like, oh, I'm destroying a needle and I'm destroying a record when I'm doing this.
Well, and to be able to do it with video as well.
Nice. I suppose you can get multiple turntables. And this whole system came out of
MIT.
MIT's Media Lab. It's a group of students that worked on this project. And so now it's kind of, I don't know if it's being released and actually being sold, but the functionality, if you were someone very interested in doing that kind of performance art, it would definitely be available for you if you took some time to research it. Yeah. I don't have the information in front of me of what company it is. We'll have to mention
it. We were so blown away by it that we didn't even... I don't know. Do we even give them a card to try and get them on the show later?
No, we were just like, wow, that's cool. What else did we see, John?
Let's see. That was the thing that really blew me away.
I know, it really did blow... Okay, one of the things. We talked about it. Last week, we had a Blaze call-in, who's one of our regular listeners, and he calls up. He's a friend of mine as well. And he asked... Can I upgrade my Mac? And I can't recall if he had a laptop or a desktop machine. And I said, you know what? How old is it? No, those booster discs, those booster circuits that actually upgrade hardware on Macs, they're not worth it. And basically, my information was completely wrong. There are companies out there that basically take the Motorola chipsets and repackage them and sell them available to upgrade your Mac. So let's say you have a Blue G3 and you want a better machine to run Panther. You can go ahead and buy a G4 gigahertz processor with board.
Up to 1.4 gigahertz.
Up to 1.4 gigahertz. And install that in the G3. Now, the G3 case is actually a G4 computer, and it's equivalent to a G4. There's a little bit of limitations on some of the bus speeds. Like, you want to check out your bus speed versus what it is. But I found that the guy that helped us out was just great. I thought he was really wonderful. I didn't get his name, but the company is called Sunnet, that we worked with. It Simply Fast is their tagline. And for more information about Sonnet Technologies and upgrading your Mac, you can call 949-587-3500. And it's also Sonnet Tech, SONNETTECH.com. And we will probably have them on the show in the future talking about upgrading your Mac, just to give you an idea of prices. To get a 1 gigahertz G4, we're talking about between the $200 and $400 range, somewhere in there. So that's kind of nice to be able to upgrade a Macintosh. I never think to do that.
And we're going to try and get one of these and write up a little article. I gave my son my old blue and white G3 to play games on, and it's just not cutting it for some of the games we play anymore. So one of the things we'd like, and we've gotten the better graphics card, but it's only got a PCI slot. It doesn't have an AGP slot. So we can only get a PCI-based accelerator. Didn't really do much for it. This guy said that a processor upgrade would really help a lot, since a lot of that stuff is processor intensive. So therefore, we're going to try and contact Sonnet, see if we can get one, and play around with it and put our results up. We'll let you know if that happens.
We have Tom, from Salinas. Tom, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Oh, hi, thank you. For the record, I do have an iMac. It's a little old one, and I love it, but I don't have anything to talk about right now about Macintosh. I'm calling about my son's computer. My 13-year-old boy put together a hot rod computer, and he was loving it. It was working great, and he's playing games with it, and he downloaded some music, I think, for some friends. And
can you speak up a bit? Speak as loud as you can, if you would.
Okay.
It's really
he was having a great old time, and just recently now, the machine is running so slow, and it takes about 20 minutes to boot up, and he can run programs on it, like his word processing, but it's everything is just
so okay. Slow. So he built this on his own machine, mm-hmm. and he basically got started downloading a lot of stuff, music, other things, and now it's running really slow.
Yes.
Okay. The standard thing for things running slow, the first thing you want to check, or the thing that's less scary, if you will, is that the hard drive is just too full. And that will happen if you start filling up your hard drive. Pretty soon you'll get to a point where the operating system will slow down. That's probably not what is happening.
That's the problem with Macintoshes. But is this a Macintosh or a PC?
No, this is a PC.
Yeah, because that's not a problem with a PC so much.
Well, no, it happens with PC. No, I was talking about PC. Macs, I don't know what the issue is when you fill up. But
if the C drive is too full, it could be an issue.
Yeah.
But
so what you
really
want to do first...
End, this has a lot of memory. It's not going to hurt it.
Yeah,
bad.
He's got a huge hard drive on it.
Okay.
He's a quarter full.
Okay, so that's the easiest thing to check. Yeah, it's really quite simple to find out if it's too full. Now, the scarier thing that probably is what's happening is you have some kind of Trojan or application that's running on the machine and using up a lot of space. So
A lot of processing.
So what – and I would assume that's what it is. Sean, how does someone deal with this problem?
Well, you need to go up to Norton or McAfee or
Symantec.
Some reputable antivirus firm and – or, you know, do some antivirus checks. That could be the problem. And we've seen it. That's the thing. If these applications are running in the background, they really do take a lot of your processing power.
One thing that can be put on the machine that's relatively common, actually, is a Trojan application that starts sending out email. So spammers can theoretically take advantage of your machine as a spamming engine.
You wouldn't know that's happening?
No, you wouldn't necessarily know that's happening, except for the machine's running really slow. That's pretty much your only telltale sign. The other thing you could check is what kind of network do you have? Do you just have dial-out?
No, it's a DSL.
A DSL, okay. So one thing you could check is if traffic is happening across your line while you're not really doing anything. That's a good telltale sign. But what you want to do is just start removing stuff from the machine.
Applications that are running in the background. Some applications can use more resources than others. And one way to check this is by going to your start menu, start button, and go to run and type in msconfig. And that'll bring up a little dialog that tells you what's being loaded when Windows loads. The very last tab in msconfig is startup. And you may want to go through there and, there are checkboxes for each of the applications that are loading. And what you want to do is you kind of have to be careful because... You know, some applications rely on these to run. But start the ones that you don't recognize or the ones that you feel comfortable not running when Windows starts up, you know, remove those check marks. And what that'll do is those applications won't load and you'll get a better idea of whether they're affecting your performance at all. And you could try defragmenting your hard drive. If you're using your computer a lot, it doesn't matter if you have a lot of hard drive space. As you delete programs, it's freeing up little spaces here and there all over your computer. And when you're adding new applications, a lot of times they're added into those spaces. So instead of being one nice, you know, piece of memory,
contiguous
piece of memory, what that means is all your applications are, you know, loaded one bit at a time in perfect order. They're actually scattered all over your hard drive. So if your machine is, if those applications have to be read from all over the hard drive, it takes longer to load and run those applications than they would otherwise. So defragmenting lines those applications up in order so they run faster.
So what you want to do is get virus protection software. You also want to make sure that once you've done your virus protection software, you go to Microsoft and you update your OS. You've got to do that, windowsupdate.microsoft.com. If it's a 98 machine, do that before Tuesday or whatever. They'll probably still have those features. But basically, you've got to make sure that the security vulnerabilities are gone so that people won't be able to reinstall stuff on your machine. And... The last thing is, if you've got some applications, especially applications for like downloading MP3s and stuff from online, are these applications that allow you to do multi-sharing networks. And sometimes those are enabled by default to share your files. And that will take up some time and a lot of your bandwidth to upload files.
Now, when you're booting Windows, things that you can do are if you've got some hardware loaded or a device driver for hardware and you've removed that hardware and Windows still thinks it's connected... this isn't so much the case with Windows XP as it was with the older versions. But what happens is it seems like it'll take forever for the OS to load, and that's because it's actually going off looking for this hardware that's not there. So it's, you're waiting for it to time out. So it could be 20, 30 seconds. Makes your boot time seem forever.
Right.
So you may want to check into that, or if you've loaded a bunch of fonts, something that puts a lot of data into your registry, it takes, makes the registry take longer to load, will also affect your load.
Tom, did we help you out a little bit?
Yes. We're talking 20 minutes to boot up.
20 minutes to boot
up?
Yeah,
there's something seriously wrong there then.
You could even have a bad hard drive.
Well, that's what he's thinking, but I have a feeling he picked up something funky.
No, 20 minutes would already trigger the timeouts when you're booting up an operating system. There's something else.
It just sounds like a hardware issue.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, it could be a serious software issue, too.
Oh, wait, what about what about external internal CPU cache?
Oh, that's a good point.
Because that can really slow down.
If he messed with his BIOS a lot, you could really slow down the system by
making
settings incorrectly. So what you want to do is go into the BIOS setting. Do you know what kind of motherboard it is? It doesn't matter.
People who build hot rod systems often want to go in and tweak the BIOS settings.
Yeah, so Sean, what's the BIOS settings they're going
to
look for?
Actually, the best way to test this is just go into the BIOS and choose your the default settings.
Yeah, and it'll
put it back where it was when you got it, and then try booting it. The machine.
Yeah. By the way, that is an actual menu option. It's not having to remember what you had in there. You don't have to check the menu.
Maybe go to the last memory option, right where you're going to save the settings.
And it'll say restore defaults.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to go on. Tom, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you very much.
We have Jeffrey in Los Gatos. Now, Jeffrey, your first question has to do with getting rid of spyware on your machine, right?
And Jeffrey has changed genders.
I'm impressed.
He's here. He received a message from someone that said that there was spyware on his computer, and he wondered if he should do something about it, probably not in response to that message, whether it's probably true or whether it's just a marketing ploy, and
It's spam. It's a marketing ploy. And when you receive a message that says something to the effect of, oh, something's wrong with your computer, it's completely false, and it's they're just trying to sell you something.
I suspected that. So
you must be Jeffrey.
I am. So I went out to the web and I asked for spyware removal and took somebody who had nothing to do with the message.
Uh huh.
And said, okay. So they said we'll do a free checkup. I said fine, go check. And they came up with a list of four items that they said they had found.
How'd they do this check? Did you install a piece of application from them?
No, they didn't install. It was done from the web.
That sounds a little suspicious.
That sounds suspicious too.
That said, is there any spyware is it possible that I have spyware? Of course it is.
Yes.
And so, is there a spyware removal software you like?
I would go with an antivirus software company. They're pretty good at.
I have Norton on there, as I always have. Norton will take care of all spyware.
Well,
no,
you need
won't.
To make sure your definitions are updated.
I do.
Okay. I think you're probably, since you have Norton and you update your definitions, I think you're probably relatively safe.
Okay.
The other thing is, do you install a lot of applications online randomly? Do you, download stuff and install them?
Occasionally, yes.
Okay. That is a potential for spyware to happen. I mean, what spyware is, it's kind of, odd to think, but it's an application that's running all the time that does more than what you're expecting it to do. Sometimes applications that you want, like a news reader, actually has quote, a spy reader's stuff in it as well. But they're using it for other purposes. They're using it for marketing ploys. So they give you a free application, and they also start advertising to you all the time. Now, is that spyware? It goes into an advertising, hub somewhere, gets the data, and then displays it to you, randomly popping things up. But you did download this free application, and theoretically, they need to make money from it. So if it's not hindering you too much, it's really just a trade-off. The problem is these things kind of stick around.
Yeah, when you're surfing and you get cookies, a lot of times you're opening yourself up.
That's relatively safe. What I would suggest, make sure you do have your antivirus stuff checked. The other thing is what Sean just mentioned, running from the command line. What is it, msconfig?
Yeah.
msconfig. Go there, and in the one of the tabs is going to be the startup applications, the thing that start up, that run at startup. Take a look at what they are. If you don't know what they are, go ahead and do a lookup. Do a Google search on what that phrase is, and you'll get a good information. Sometimes these spywares are called, they're actually in that list of things that start up on your computer, and you can just remove it. So that's, and then you actually have to go do the remove functions to do it. But I would basically, my first reaction is don't worry about it so much if you've got virus protection software.
I guess what I meant to say is when you're surfing and a Microsoft certificate comes up for something you don't know what it is, and it wants to install something on your machine, say no, unless you really want to install it.
Okay.
And now the second question had to do with Bluetooth, right? You have a Prius?
Yeah.
Okay. So you, what year Prius do you have?
2004.
Are you happy with the car?
Motor Trend Car of the Year.
I'm giddy, too. I just got it last week.
What color is yours?
It's blue, ocean blue.
Nice.
And I bought it from Mike, and it's really wonderful. What I'm wondering is, have you found a Bluetooth phone that works with it? Because Verizon says they don't even have any Bluetooth phones.
Oh, no. The Sony Ericsson T616.
And T68i.
Yeah. If you go to Toyota.com and follow their Bluetooth links, they actually have two phones they recommend.
Ah, okay.
But that Sony Ericsson is really nice, I got to say.
The 16?
The T616. T616.
There's your recommendation. It's going to be an expensive phone for you. Try to find a company that will give you a plan with
If you don't have a plan already, it's actually only about $50 because they give you a $200 discount with activation.
Yeah. Okay. The problem, of course, is living in Santa Cruz Mountains. So far, Verizon.
No, actually, AT&T is really good service. I live in Brookdale, and I get service all over the mountains.
AT&T?
Yep.
I live way up in Lompico, and if you stand on the deck and hold the phone right, you can get reception from AT&T.
The Sony Ericsson T616 is an AT&T phone.
Great. Thank you much.
Yep.
You're welcome. Now, of course, a lot of these phones actually support multiple multiple systems, so you can get the system with different antenna in it to support different phone companies. John?
We had an email from Pat Salisbury about this, who says, about their first question. He says it might be spyware. I'll read from his email here. McAfee and Norton probably won't spot the most pernicious stuff. I faced the same problem on a friend's XP machine. Norton found 6 Trojans, but that didn't fix it. And then in quotes, SpyBot Search and Destroy found 288 pieces of spyware on the box. Mm-hmm. And then he says, I wrote a paper about it with some links and resources.
Oh, cool.
So
what's one of the links? Give us a link.
I haven't gotten all the way down to the links. He's actually written quite a long paper about have you seen SpyBot Search and Destroy yet? It's way cool. And he's written this really long thing about it. And he doesn't really seem to be affiliated with them because it's at sculptors.com.
Does he give us a link for that information?
I'm looking through
you
it right
now.
Keep
on looking it up, and we're going to take a next call. We have... Steve from Boulder Creek. Steve, welcome to GeekSpeak.
I'm calling again about a Bluetooth question.
Okay.
I would like to use a cell phone as a modem for my iBook as I go on a road trip.
Uh-huh.
And I wonder...
Does your iBook have Bluetooth?
My iBook has nothing for Bluetooth at this point, so I'm wondering what I have to do hardware-wise and if I have to do some configuring with the iBook.
Do you have a Bluetooth phone?
I'm signing up for a plan right now, and so that certainly is going to be an important thing in the phone that I buy.
Okay. Upgrading an iBook to Bluetooth. I know there are USB Bluetooth devices out there, but for a Mac, I'm not so sure what the support is.
I know Chris Dunphy does this.
Does Chris Dunphy know it on a Mac? Yeah, he does.
He has a Mac.
All right. This is what we're going to do. Go to geekspeak.org. Can you do this with Steve?
Absolutely.
Okay, go to geekspeak.org. Click on the Geeks. Then click on Send a Message and just tell us what's going on, and we will make sure that Chris responds to you with how he's doing it and recommendations.
Cool. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
And we'll try to get information for next week.
Yeah, that would be great for everybody else. Thanks, Steve, for the call.
Okay.
And we've got another call from Santa Cruz. Slive? How do you pronounce your name? Oh, right there. It was a spyware question as well. We have a lot of people asking about spyware. All right, Suzanne.
We got an email about adware.
Okay.
Somebody, Patrick Salisbury, recommends that Windows users use this great service called GuideScope. It's at guidescope.com. It's ad blocker. It grew out of JunkBuster. And for Linux, Unix, there's Privoxy, Privoxy. And I must also say from Lavasoft, they have adware, which I think is pretty good, too.
All right. Suzanne from Aptos, welcome to GeekSpeak.
I am not a very sophisticated computer user, but I have a virus that I can't get rid of. I did the McAfee virus scan, and it lists a whole bunch of viruses, and then it you delete them, but it wouldn't delete this one.
Okay, what's the name of it?
Downloadplus.exe.
Well, luckily, that will not affect your Macintosh at all.
Oh, I don't have a Macintosh.
Oh, I'm sorry. For some reason, I thought you had a Mac. never mind, then. It will affect your computer. Download plus.exe.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And you ran McAfee, and it found it, but then when it was trying to delete it, when it wasn't able
to
delete it?
It wouldn't delete it. And then I went to the Explorer, you know, the...
You went to try to find it?
Try to find it, yeah. And it's there, but I can't delete it. It won't let me delete
it. Might be because it's running in the background.
Oh.
Yeah, it's probably running as we speak.
With your McAfee, did you get a boot disk?
No.
Or, I don't know, you haven't used McAfee. There may be a way to create a bootable CD, but you wouldn't want to do it on your machine.
Does McAfee work that way anymore? With NTFS partitions nowadays, can it read it to do that? It's not getting much more complex. It's getting into a whole big...
Okay. I got to say, what I usually do with... I did this for a friend recently who ran into a virus problem. She couldn't get rid of her viruses either. So I took a hard drive out of her computer and cleaned them off on my computer.
So just do that, Suzanne.
You know.
So, Sean, when are you going to be over at Suzanne's house and ask us? Okay, this is what I suggest doing.
Okay.
You can boot your computer in safe mode, and safe mode will probably not start up as many things as normally started up. Mm-hmm. And the way you boot a Windows machine in safe mode is...
Yeah, when you hear the beep right after the BIOS loads, you hit the F8 key.
And you hold it down?
F8. I don't want to hold it down because you don't want to overflow the keyboard buffer.
You'll have to reboot again.
Yeah.
Just hit it.
You know, once or twice.
Okay.
Right when the OS is about to load.
Okay.
And it should bring up a menu.
Well, maybe three times.
Yeah, three or four times. I kind of just hit it, you know, once a second until I get the screen.
Yeah.
And then when you get the screen, you're gonna have a whole bunch of choices, and you just want to choose safe mode.
Okay.
Then in safe mode, your computer will be minimum. There'll be a whole bunch of messages saying you're in safe mode. You can't do a lot of things.
Okay.
But one thing you will be able to do is pretty much delete anything you want. So then you do that same search for that file and delete it, and you're set. And the next time you boot, it'll probably give you an error message saying, I can't find this application.
Okay, so the basics, you do search and then the file name?
Yeah.
Okay, and then delete, you do delete and then the file name.
If you know the file name.
Yeah, I have the file name.
Tensor McAfee will be doing this for you.
Yeah, right? McAfee, if it found it, try running that again. It'll probably find it again.
Uh-huh.
And hopefully in safe mode, you'll be able to delete it or quarantine.
Oh,
yeah.
Do I run McAfee
in safe mode?
Yeah, it'll run.
Yeah,
it'll be great.
How do I do that?
You just once you're in safe mode, it's going to look like your normal
computer. Just like Windows.
The computer's going to be like Windows. It's just going to not be able to do everything.
Oh, okay.
It'll be lower resolution.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But otherwise, everything will look
the
same.
And then after you do it, you just restart and you'll be set.
Okay.
Thank you very much for
the
call.
Thank you. Bye.
I've looked a little bit up on the website that Pat sent us, Pat Salisbury. He sent us, it's got this great link to this place called safer-networking.org. It has a place called SpyBot. That's where they have the application Search and Destroy. I was a little skeptical because it sounded like, you know, he was so enthusiastic about it. It sounded like it was spam. I went up and looked around at it. You can't buy this software. You just download it. And if you want, you can make a donation to a charity of your choice. And then it actually goes in and it's got a... If you go to www.safer-networking.org...
It looks like a really good resource.
It's got a lot of great stuff. It has tutorials, FAQs, everything you need.
Great. John, thank you for taking a look at that.
Look for Download Plus.
And who was it that sent that information in?
That was Pat Salisbury.
Pat, thank you very much for participating in GeekSpeak. All right, we have...
Hi, Sylvia.
Sylvia, you're back. Hi.
Yeah, I pushed the button on the phone.
Well, we're very short on time, so please go ahead and ask your question.
You know, I can't download anything to get rid of this spy because it won't let me use my browser. I was told by SBC to disconnect from the DSL modem and use a dial-up. And that would get around the spyware in order.
Okay. What's happening with your machine when you try to open your browser?
I got this perfectnav.com, which is like, you know, it's some spy thing. It wants to open their website.
Okay.
In the browser, and it doesn't even open theirs. It's so far gone. It just keeps.
So basically, you're okay. Can you do other things on your computer? Can you use the internet? Can you use Explorer? Can you browse through files? So basically, your computer's
can't use Outlook Express.
Okay.
Can't use. Even if I don't have a browser open, my desktop fills with 100 ads.
Oh wow. Okay, so you really have a problem. We're running out of time.
This is called Perfect Nav. Email geeks at GeekSpeak?
On someone else's computer.
On someone else's computer. Yeah. Oh, man. There is a if you do a Google search on Perfect Nav, there is a removal, adware removal instructions.
What you need to do, I think, is go to someone else's computer and do some research, get that file, and then go back to your computer and run it.
Maybe I can put it on a disk on the working computer?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Good luck with your dilemma and problem, and you're welcome to give us an email or go to our site and we'll help you out. And we're out of time, so thank you very much.
Sounds like we need an antivirus show.
We do. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers, innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. And instead of thanking the geeks, John, quick, what is it that you want to give? Do you want to give a URL?
Yes. No, I actually wanted to give remove the files perfectnavbho.dll and tipb.exe, and that should get rid of it.
And our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Thank you all for participating in GeekSpeak. To those of you that called in, thank you for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without your input, it would just be us geeking out. Who wants to listen to that? This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KDBH, San Otto, or on the web at kusp.org. We'll be back next week as we are every week. But right now, stay tuned for Fine Print.